You are on the record.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Thursday, August 10th, Data Board Meeting, 12:05. I'd like to welcome everybody here. Before you have an agenda, and I will call the meeting to order at this time, and I would ask Quinn to poll the board members.
Deputy Commissioner Faraday.
Here.
Mr. Kennedy.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Cruz.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you continue with staff and public, please, Quinn?
Okay. As I point to you, please state your name and organization. We'll start here at the table.
Brenda Applegate, ADA.
We'll start on the call.
Hamilton, IPJ.
Mark Gardner, PFM.
Dan Britton, Pentex.
Mark Davis, ADA.
Alan Bailey, Petroleum Fuse.
Jim Hensaff, ADA.
Karsten Rodrick, ADA.
Sherry Severson, ADA.
Back row.
Michelle Hook, ADA.
Judy Ellsworth,
ADA.
Jerry G. ADA, Park Law.
Ready, PFM.
And is that ADA?
Jim Zimini, YKHC.
Marvin Tompkins, YKHC.
Lisa Wimmer, YKHC.
Josh Pepper, Davis Constructors.
Matt Newman, Arcadis.
Michael Lamb, ADA.
Mike McKenzie.
Ben Kempinen, ADA. Do we have any public on the phone? Public on the phone?
Yes.
Who is this, please?
Yes, this is Joe Mostort with the Interior Gas Utility.
Any other public?
Sounds like that's all.
All right. Thank you, Quinn. Item number four is the agenda approval. Before you have an agenda, from item 1 through 10, I'd like to note on 7E, we're going to add that you don't have the most current agenda. We're adding at the end Blue Crest Energy under executive session.
I'll move the agenda, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. With that, the agenda is approved as presented. Next up on our agenda is 5 public comments. Remind everybody, please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We'd like to clearly state your name and affiliation, if any. With that, I'll ask anybody online. Is anybody online wishing to make a public comment? Anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment? Seeing and hearing none, I will close the public comment section. That brings us to item number 6, prior minutes for June 19th and June 29th. Put motions on the table.
I'll move both those minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay. Discussions, questions, deletions, corrections on the minutes from anybody? Objections from anybody on the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are adopted. Brings us to item number 7. New business. Of course, we have item A, resolution G17-11, buying the sale of ADA loan anticipated revenue notes series 2017 to YKHC project. And Brenda, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Item 7A, resolution number G17-11. Regards to approving the sale of ADA loan anticipation revenue notes series 2017 for the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation project in a principal amount not to exceed $165 million. The resolution also authorizes execution of an indenture between the authority and U.S. Bank National Association as trustee to secure the loan anticipation notes. Execution of a loan and security agreement securing payment of a loan anticipation revenue notes between ADA and YKHC, and delegating authority to staff to complete the necessary documents and to issue the notes for the financing of the project as long as the documents remain in substantially the form presented to the board at this meeting today. Just as some explanation before we get into the project, these bonds will be conduit bonds of the authority. The authority receives an application fee and a financing fee on issuance of these bonds, and that's a one-time fee, plus we're reimbursed for our costs. Ongoing continuing disclosure is generally the responsibility of the borrower on these, although ADA is the issuer of the bonds. The authority will use the proceeds from the sale of the notes to make a loan to YKHC and will assign its interest in the loan and security agreement and other security documents to the trustee as security for the notes. The notes are not general obligations of the authority or of the state. The notes and the loan are secured and payable solely from certain assets and income described in the master indenture. That's in your packet. The notes are also secured by and payable from a loan from the United States Department of Agriculture Rural Development. The notes will be conduit revenue notes and will be titled loan anticipation notes to reflect the anticipation that payment of the notes will come from the USDA loan. The only source of payment for the notes will be the USDA loan and payments and other assets identified in the indenture. The authority will not pledge its credit or resources to the payment of the notes, and the holders of the notes will have no right to seek payment from the authority other than as described in the indenture. The notes will not be general obligations of ADA or the state. The note holders only have rights to payments under the loan and under the master indenture, and the right to receive payments for the notes from the USDA loan. Proceeds from the notes will be used for project construction and certain other expenses with maturity of less than 5 years from the date of issuance. Details regarding the project are included in the board packet, and we also have a short one-minute presentation here at the end. Although it's been a long time coming and financing has taken some effort to get finalized, in the end, this is a conduit bond, and ADA is helping to provide a vehicle for YKHC to obtain tax-exempt financing for medical purposes, which is a public purpose, allowing the tax-exempt status of the notes. ADA is simply a conduit to the tax-exempt financing with essentially no risk to itself and or to the state. The financing is a good use of one of ADA's tools in its toolbox. Fred Eoff, financial advisor for YKHC with Public Financial Management, and representatives from YKHC are present to answer questions regarding the financing or the project. And then we do have just a short one-minute presentation for you to watch about the project.
Questions first?
Before we get in.
I do have one. What's the anticipated rating of the bonds?
Chris?
What's the question?
Anticipated rating of the bonds?
We anticipate, because the notes are 100%, the interest on the notes through maturity will be 100% cash collateralized, and there is a takeout commitment from USDA. Our anticipation is that the notes are going to be rated one of the two highest short-term ratings, either SP1 or SP2.
And what kind of interest rates would that?
I'm just looking at the market today, a minute ago, I'm pretty sure we're going to be under 2%.
What's a typical fee for something like this?
It's a sliding fee, so it depends on the and I don't know what the fee was, but it's a sliding fee based on the amount that we're financing. So
is it accurate at all?
No, I don't think so, but I could definitely get that for you. I just don't know how much it was off the top of my head.
Is there any servicing after approval?
Well, generally, like I said, the borrower has the continuing disclosure requirements. Generally, we do monitor that they're meeting those requirements, and we're requesting that they confirm on an annual basis that they've made all of the filings that they're required to make.
And Michael, maybe you know this. Michael, what's the cumulative dollar amount that ADA has sponsored on the revenue bond?
It's in the billion plus.
Yeah,
amount.
It's like 1.4 billion or something so, like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 1.4. This is a large one. And the other thing to your prior question, Mr. Chair, is that I think it was the Ketchikan meeting. The fees are based upon the last fee schedule that was board approved. So whatever that board approved schedule was, which Brendan's right, as you go up, the dollar amount increases, it gets to be less, but it will be based exactly on the board approved schedule.
And I think we financed, I want to say like 318 projects through a conduit financing.
Seems to me, I remember maybe the last one was a brewery in Juneau. Was that the last one?
Probably. Was that the last one?
Canoe,
that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Boys and girls.
Maybe I just wanted to remember the real reason, you know.
Any other questions?
Any more questions, board? Go ahead, continue.
Okay. So with that, then we can watch the presentation regarding the project.
This is just a quick time lapse that runs us all the way through, and you'll see a pause in the winter. You can see the piling on the side, the piling go in, the piling pile gets smaller. And then here pretty soon you see it go pretty dead through the winter. And the snow will come, the snow will go away. Pile caps go on as we're getting ready for spring. And the insulation will go across the underneath the building, you'll see it lay across. And here pretty soon the steel starts to go up. Pour the concrete out, and the final shot is from today, and you see the framing happening in earnest. That's where we're at.
I thought I saw a lineman drive by.
You might have.
So, if I may use a little Josh Peppers with Davis. Josh, would you mind, we've seen in the news and a picture today in the dispatch news of roads in Bethel and having some issues with it. So your construction technique here, the design, will that alleviate something that happening to this facility?
Okay, so this facility is grounded on geotechnical engineering that relies on cooling and shallow piles. And so we have 50-foot piles, and they're cool. So we have, there's a couple implements there to the cooling. We have the vertical thermoprobes.
Similar to the pipeline?
Similar to the pipeline. And then we have a flat loop system that the engineering shows that we don't need right now, but we're putting it in and roughing it in. And so in the future, if temperatures are adverse and the subsurface temperatures monitoring shows that, then they can easily activate the flat loop. And the flat loop is installed underneath the insulation, and it has condensers that show up on the outside of the building. And so that's an additional level of cooling. And so, the nice thing about the shallow pile design is that you keep the ground frozen. And when permafrost thaws, even if you have a deep pile, let's say it goes down 100 feet, then all that thawing permafrost adds drag weight to the pile. And so we elected to go with the engineering strategy that just kept it frozen rather than having to gamble on that long-term effect. So it's...
Are you connecting to the building next to it?
Yeah.
And how's that building to react, the connection?
That building is also on a shallow pile system, and it's going to be mitigated with the supplemental cooling system, during the time we're there. And so it has engineering in process as we speak to put thermoprobes underneath the existing hospital. So, and that was the other reason we wanted a shallow pile system on the new one, was because we didn't want to have a system that was preparing for a thaw on one hand and relying on frozen on the other, because the existing building has to rely on frozen ground.
All right, thank you. So, on the video, any questions on the board on that video? Okay. So, are we raising a question?
I need a motion.
Yes. No, I understand that. Would you like to move?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll just move resolution number 17-11.
Yeah. Second year. Okay. The motion's worth. Any final questions or comments before roll call? Bryn, would you pull the board, please?
Deputy Commissioner Paraday.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next item up on our agenda is the Interior Energy Project Update Quarter Report for the legislature. Gene here?
Yeah.
You're getting your exercise today, Gene? I'd like to thank the wife, the folks from Bethel for coming and sharing this project with us today.
Thank you.
I really like to thank the board for their continuing support of this project. It's a very important thing for achieving this goal.
Thank you.
That little 1 minute video is better than any cat video I've seen.
we think so.
Thank you.
There was no mining in the building.
We cut out the frames where the wind actually took the camera and swung it all the way. You couldn't even see the project anymore.
Piling's close enough to mining.
Yeah. Welcome, Gene.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to just to quickly go over the different components of the Interior Energy Project that I do generally at the board meetings. The first item, of course, is gas supply, and as you know from previous meetings, securing the gas supply that would allow the board to feel comfortable certifying a House Bill 105 plan, what we call a 105 plan, which was required before additional IEP financing could be extended to the project, has been the holdup. In executive session, we will give you a little bit more information on where we are in negotiation on that gas supply contract. With regard to that, then I'll move down to the other components. There hasn't been a whole lot of movement on the other components because they are reliant, of course, on access to the financing tools, the LNG plant potential expansion, also potential of getting more production out of the existing plant. The transportation, we have talked in the past about exploring options, railing LNG into the community, also dropping the delivery price via trailer transport by securing larger capacity trailers. That all moves forward, and I believe at this point we actually have taken delivery of all of the large capacity trailers.
They're en route.
They're en route. The storage at the last board meeting, the board did take action to access some of the capital funds so that Dan Britton, on behalf of FNG, could start the detailed engineering that will be needed to make sure that we don't miss a construction season, a winter construction season, to put the foundation in place for the storage expansion in Fairbanks. The utility consolidation, also an executive session, you will get an update on where we stand on the negotiation of the documents to facilitate potential utility consolidation between the Pentex assets, which are owned outright by ADA, and the IGU utility system, merging them into one utility, so we hope to get greater economies of scale to deliver energy into the interior market. With regards to distribution, during the last meeting, I did let you know that House Bill 80, the PACE legislation, was passed by the legislature. At this point, I don't think it has yet been transmitted to the governor for signature. That was waiting just because of the ongoing special sessions, and I believe the administration wants to organize a time to potentially sign the bill into law in the interior. Representative Wool from the interior was the sponsor of the legislation and worked closely with us and with the administration on advancing that bill through the legislative process. One other item I would just like to touch on is the LNG storage credit. I let you know at the last meeting it was in play in House Bill 111, the oil and gas tax credit legislation. As that bill did get negotiated through the process and finally passed to the administration and subsequently signed into law, the existing LNG storage credit was not negated. There is a repealer in that bill that would repeal the LNG storage credit. However, the way that it's a fairly complicated set of the effective dates on the legislation, and that repealer is not does not kick in until after the existing end date for us to qualify for storage. So there really is no danger. I did think at one point that the way the effective dates work, that end date to qualify for the credit may have stepped out a year or two, but when I took a more detailed look at it, that's not correct. But it would require that money is available for that credit at the time that we hopefully qualify for it. So,
can you remind us again what the dollar amount is?
It's a dollar for dollar match on the expense of storage. If the storage qualifies, it has to be new storage, not storage that was in play before a certain date. And it's up to a total of $15 million per storage facility. So in the interior, we are going to expand, build new storage in South Fairbanks that has a $40 million price tag. So hopefully that would qualify for a total of potentially $15 million. When storage components then are moved out to North Pole to initially feed that system and then also be a part of the overall delivery system for either combined utility, that storage is likely to also qualify if it meets the requirements.
Is there a date certain on completion?
You have to have the storage completed and receiving gas and qualifying by January 1st, 2020. So that is part of the reason why there was some concern that we not run a risk of missing this construction season as far as getting the foundation engineering done and get prepared to put the foundation in place because of that date.
And the $15 million in the scheme of the economic component of the IEP project, and based on your modeling, the 15, what's the difference in price to the consumer if the tax credit isn't paid for versus if it is?
That's why I told Mr. Gardner to be on standby. We have not accounted that as an absolute in the economic and the number crunching, but we do hope ultimately it's there. It would be a portion of it.
I'd like to know what the exposure is, so what the impact would be. Jerry?
Yeah, and going along that same vein, the past 2 years, the legislature has approved an amount which is less than the full amount of credits outstanding. This year is approximately 16% of the outstanding credits are prorated. I don't recall whether the 028 credits and this credit would be prorated together or not, but how would that affect it if it were paid over, say, 5 years or 6 years or something, instead of paid in 1 year?
Well, again, the benefit, we've not counted on the benefit.
Okay.
As far as modeling. And in fact, when we present a 105 plan to you, which has to have an estimated cost of delivery into the community, and then certainly we would anticipate your questions then on, okay, then taking the last mile to deliver to the consumer, what's that likely to be? We will figure that in there. If the benefit is to be paid, it's just to the benefit of the consumer. If it is paid over time, then that benefit would just accrue to the consumer over time.
50 to 60 cents, sir, in the early years.
50 to 60 cents? And for every dollar is what to a homeowner? 150 a year?
Every dollar to a homeowner is approximately $150 a year.
Okay, so we're talking $75 a year per household. Okay.
And so with that, Mr. Chairman, that the last thing is just on conversions. Although I did not check the status, I know that AEA is working with the four larger communities in the state of Alaska, as I've reported before, to work together as municipal entities to figure out, once the PACE legislation is signed into law, how they might be able to collaborate on implementing that. We are looking for, and what the legislation requires, is a certain uniformity across the state. That's what lenders will be interested in seeing. And then having that program ultimately implemented, it is a potential vehicle then to access some of the federal funds that come with low interest rates that can flow through a program like that to the consumers.
Gene, just out of curiosity for the conversion, what is the push? I mean, what kind of dollars is the borough up there? Does it anticipate for a conversion dollar amount to convert once the current, I'll call it the pipe in the ground in the additional phases that would have been built to convert the houses? What's the economic dollars?
It really, are you talking per house?
No, for the whole, you know. How many millions, or what, 5 million, 2 million, to convert everybody? What are we, how many dollars are we talking about?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I believe the cargo report did have an estimate on that, but it really varies from house to house. For my house that had, you know, pipeline era home that had a 30-year-old boiler, I ultimately had to bite the bullet and upgrade to a more efficient fuel oil-fired boiler that can fairly, with minimal cost, be converted over to natural gas. And that cost me $10,000, well, it was about $11,000 due to some certain things that I had done. I am trying to remember, I'm thinking numbers like $50 million.
I thought it was 4,000 homes at $10,000 a piece would be 40 million.
$4 million?
It'll be somewhere between 25 and 40 million, depending on how many homes can do a retrofit. But if you assume in that 5,000 to 10,000 range for a new boiler conversion, then 4,000 homes.
Okay. And so that goes over the major bullets that I generally have given you an update on. Those are also the same bullets that are covered in the quarterly report that is submitted and has been submitted to the legislature. And with that, Mr. Chairman, just to mention a couple other things. We have been interacting with the IGU since the last board meeting on the expense issue that arose and the utilization of some of the SETS money, surplus SETS money that had been advanced to them, which we felt were not permissible under the existing scope of their SETS loans. That resulted in IGU giving a presentation to the Fairbanks Northstone Borough Assembly that in essence they had to tell all of their consultants to stand down, and they were running the risk of basically financially being put out of business if in fact they had to book the available cash that they had to them to potentially repay all that that money to ADA to repay the utilization of those SETS funds. The last board action in approving $150,000 to cover a portion of their gas supply costs, I did portray to them as, you know, a show of good faith from the ADA board that there was no intent through our interpretation of the SETS loan scope and its limitations to put them out of business. We then asked them to go through their costs and segregate them into three categories. All of the costs associated with their gas supply, interacting with us, looking for a gas supply when they said, you know, they thought they might be able to secure a better price and wanted to take the lead. We do think that there was some value to us, whether there was something out there in the market that we missed, and also as we hope to close a deal with them to be the long-term owner of the utility, it would give them some better sense of comfort that the contract that we're going to bring to you to buttress a 105 plan is in fact the best deal we can get at this time. And so the $150,000 that you approved previously was just a portion of their gas supply costs. So we asked them to break all of the expenses into three categories. One is the gas supply. The second is the tranche for integration costs, how the two utilities physically would be integrated, how the business structures would be integrated. And then the final column is due diligence expense that as they move to purchase the entity, them doing due diligence, feeling comfortable with what they're purchasing is a reasonable expense. But it really only has value to the project if, in fact, they move forward to close the deal. And so what we have proposed to them, and you have a resolution before you today, is to expand the dollar amount on gas supply to cover all of their costs, to give them an indication after board discussion today that their integration costs will be considered under an expansion of the scope of their existing SETS loan once a 105 plan is approved, because we believe, our legal advice is that we don't have the latitude to consider such a scope until we have a 105 plan. And then ultimately the due diligence cost would be an expense that could be rolled into the final financing and basically a new sales loan when we move to close a deal for the sale of Pentex assets to them to unify the utility. They have modeled those chunks of cash potentially coming to them over that suggested timeline, and have come to the conclusion that that gives them the latitude to remain financially solvent. And ultimately, if they were to decide for whatever reason that they didn't want to move forward and close the deal, that they would have cash on hand to make sure that any sets that had been advanced to them that were not appropriately used under either the existing scope of the loan or an expanded scope of the loan, that they would have the resources to repay ADA if in fact they did move forward to close the deal. So we think we have proposed something that is reasonable from both sides, basically to get back past the current sort of accounting problem that we have between the two entities. It really does not ask them to move away from their legal review of and advice on what they think should have been allowed under the existing SETS loan, but it allows us to honor the advice of from our AG advisor that there is in fact a limitation that was put on this body by the legislature that we really can't get around and until you certify a 105 plan.
Questions for Gene? Thank you, Gene.
Mr. Chairman.
Fred?
Mr. Chairman, I want to be careful with this subject, but I don't want to dance around it either. I would appreciate Gene's thoughts on the unfolding events of the last 2 weeks in the context of what's been perhaps some difficult press coverage, and there's more than administrative expenses involved here. There's some management philosophy and differences of opinion between our organizations that are best resolved cooperatively. And I'm concerned with the tenor of some of what I've read and just look to work in good faith to smooth that out, which I know you've been working on. So if you could provide some insight into that process, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly. I think it really has been, we have been very consistent in conveying to IGU that we want to just systematically move the project forward. From time to time, for whatever reason, they chose to portray things or make statements to the press that I think would suggest otherwise, and I'm just always caution the team that we don't overreact, we just keep moving things forward. That was direction that I got from this board a couple meetings ago. Just keep advancing the project. Whether they choose to portray something at any particular time for a reason in negotiations, I don't know. But I've tried to always keep a channel of communication going with their staff that the ADA is not trying to signal that they're walking away from the deal. We want to, as best as we can, apply the tools that were given to us by the legislature to move this thing forward.
Gene, in your opinion, if they didn't have the cash shortfall for the bills with the purchase process be continuing?
Yes, I think they were just concerned that some of the consultants that they had on board, whether their continued work would make the potential situation worse. And so I think the call that they made to have those folks cease work temporarily was appropriate. But even at that point, we had indicated that it was not our intent, and certainly with the board's last action, it signaled it was not your intent to have them shut down. And so we thought we were in discussions at that time of a sensible way to move forward. And so that really was in the works and well on its way at the time that they gave their quarterly update to the Borough Assembly. It was unfortunate that the way the meeting was noticed, even though I was there, and in fact was texting back and forth with one of the assembly members, I was not able to answer some of the concerns that came up that would have quickly extinguished a particular line of concern, or certainly let them know that while there was an interpretation given to them by their lawyer, that our interpretation, you know, we had good advice, we felt, from the Department of Law, and in fact, you know, our position was not as something just fabricated out of whole cloth, that it really did rely on what we felt was a correct reading of the legislation. When we finally had an opportunity through a subsequent meeting 2 weeks later to go back before the assembly and actually lay out our interpretation of the law, the House Bill 105, and the limitation that was placed on us. And again, placed on us not at our request. It was something that the legislature, in fact, Mr. Parity and I were sitting in House Resources when the original amendment passed. It required actually the legislature to certify when a 105 plan was done. That was deemed to be unworkable, and so we went up to House Finance and got that amended so that it was the ADA board that would make that determination, because the ADA board could be much more responsive. The legislature is not in session for much of the year.
Well, not anymore, but that's
less. So it was not a limitation at our request, but nonetheless, it was there. As we made that explanation to the assembly members, as the meeting was wrapping up, one of them, he said, well, it certainly was not clear to him when the initial meeting took place what Ada's position was and what Ada's position was grounded on. And he said that he understood it, you know, it was clear to him why there was this difference of opinion, and he was pleased that we had negotiated a potential way to get around it.
Chairman, I'd like to thank our staff. The work you brought forward today in the context of the resolution, we're working in good faith with IGU to advance the project and to address the concerns they brought to the table. But I'd also like to add that it's not an infinite process. We have set guardrails to our team negotiating on the board's behalf or on ADA's behalf to engage IGU and reach resolution, and it's coming time to see that bear fruit.
Thanks, Ray. Gina, I do have one question, and it has to do with the cost that IGU felt that they may not get reimbursed for and asked. And so the mechanics of that are, does IGU send the invoices for approval from ADA, and does ADA get them turned back around, yes or no? How does it physically work? IGU would know post haste that hey, this may or may not, as ongoing operations that they're doing, that, so they would have an idea that what would be considered appropriate and not. I mean, is there anything that timeline is either too long, or the exact response back to IGU for their benefit to tell them, here's where we think there may be some issues so they can get resolved right away for them so they can do their proper business?
Part of the problem stems from the existing CETS loan being for a construction project. It was initially let in 2014 and then expanded in 2015, and the major construction of the IGU system and also additional pipe in the F&G system through a separate loan took place in 2015. So that mechanism was in place in 2014 as we went into the legislative session. And then the legislature passed 105 and put this limitation on us, basically saying for any agreements that you have to let money out the door and money that you've let out the door, you can honor those agreements, but you cannot extend or authorize any additional expenditures beyond what you've already let out the door. And so those construction projects had a specific scope that were for construction of pipe in the ground. ADA did not own the Pentest assets at that time, and so none of that existing scope really anticipated doing due diligence to buy an LNG plant. We didn't own it at the time. And so although we've looked, both IGU and our side, we looked for latitude, you know, whether there was anything that could be interpreted broadly enough. You know, our advice from the legal counsel was, you just couldn't get there. And so under a construction loan, where you've got people out in the field, you're going to be expending money fairly rapidly. And so the way the system was set up was that IGU will be able to charge money, apply sets money, to expenses that were specifically in the scope of work. And they were free to do that, but they had to apply to specific scope items. They were not able to add scope items without getting written approval from ADA. They provide those billings to us, or those expenditures to us, on a quarterly basis. We don't actually approve them. If we saw things in there that we felt were inappropriate, the next time they made a proposed draw on the loan, we would negotiate with them and potentially subtract them from their next draw. But because construction stopped, there was never a next draw, basically. In addition, most of the expenses, as you anticipate, when after ADA purchased the Pentex assets and we started discussions with them, in more in earnest in the latter part of 16, we didn't really see a lot of those expenditures happen until sort of the last quarter of 2016, which was information that we got then in early 2017, and then the first quarter of 2017, which we got then, you know, after that first quarter. So that's not to say that there weren't some expenditures that were then ultimately questioned by us earlier in 2016. And should we have, you know, said, hold up, you know, what's going on here? It looks like you're potentially applying money from the SETS loan outside of the scope. I probably should have sounded that alarm sooner. Certainly when Jeff San Juan and Matt sort of took over the review of the quarterly reports, which was in 2017, after Nixon Moniak had left, you know, our concern started to ramp up. At the same time, we were, though, watching and trying to monitor what other funds IGU had access to, and they have a separate state grant that's being administered through the Fairbanks-Cornstalk Borough. And it appeared that, you know, if there were things that were ultimately questioned, there would be money there to cover them. We shouldn't have counted on that because they had budgeted some of that money going forward. So that's where we got into the misalignment. And we believe that we've now proposed something that they have reviewed and blessed as workable that gets us beyond this issue.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Brad.
I just want to return to the misalignment and the resolution before us. I think all parties are working in good faith to use the capital resources that have been allocated, the capital, the SETS funds, and the bonding authority. And this is a major nut we're trying to crack, and we're only going to do it if we're all in harness together. I want to keep focused on that.
Thank you, Brad. Okay. Any questions? Thanks again, Gene. Okay, that brings us up to resolution G17-10 related to gas supply costs incurred by the Interior Gas Utility.
So resolution G17-10A is an amendment to resolution G17-10 dated June 29th, 2017, which approved reimbursing the Interior Gas Utility for up to $150,000 in costs incurred pursuing a gas supply for the Interior Energy Project. Today's amendment would increase the maximum to be reimbursed to $345,000. Reimbursement will be from the FY14 capital budget appropriation. And I think Dean has outlined some of this in the previous discussion.
Mr. Chairman, going back to the original $150,000 that was approved by the board, we did receive invoices and timesheets from IGU on that. I put them through the SIN, but I had asked for some additional information on some of them to really true that up. We've now got, again, the total cost segregated and invoices submitted. This is the hard copy of all of the invoices, all of the expenses, and gas supplies is a component of this. We did a quick review of the math, just adding things up yesterday to make sure that the suggested $345 is the appropriate amount that should give us a $1,000 or $2,000 maybe cushion. We will go through these now to make sure, again, the invoices, the timesheets associated with invoices meet the gas supply. You know, it's a clean expense, specifically for gas supply, before a check is issued under the using the reimbursement document that has been developed by ADA and approved by IGU. We did have accountants talk to accountants yesterday as far as us, based on your action today, issuing a check. There would be an expectation then that that money would be received by IGU, and IGU, in essence, would write us a check back to reduce the surplus sets money that, that has been advanced to us and basically reduce that potential obligation that they would have to reimburse sets funds that have been advanced to them beyond their allowable expenditures. So we're making sure the accountants are tracking with each other to make sure that it's going to appear on everybody's books. Everybody knows how it will appear on the books.
Questions? Okay, I'll take a motion from somebody for G17-10.
Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and move the approval of resolution G17-11. No, 10, 10, G17-10A.
10A.
I'll second.
Thanks, Gary. Any further discussion? Motion's on the table. Quinn, would you pull the board?
Okay. Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Quinn. All right, that brings us up to resolution G17-12, establishing permanent rates for the operating subsidiary of Pembex Alaska Natural Gas, LLC.
Thank you. So, for comment and discussion on resolution G17-12, which establishes permanent rates for the operating subsidiaries of Pentex Alaska Natural Gas Company, Dan Britton, is for us.
Okay. Welcome, Dan. Welcome back, Gene. Or did you go anywhere? Yep. So,
good afternoon. So, if you'll recall, as part of our budgeting process, we established a rate increase on an interim basis. One of the requirements that we that was created at the time made a purchase Pentex was to follow a process when rate adjustments were being made for consumers. And this board acts as the essentially the regulatory body that makes sure that the rates that are being charged to the consumers are fair and reasonable. What we did was send notice to all of our customers about the rate change 30 days prior to the rate change taking effect, and also notified them that they had an opportunity to submit written or verbal comments to ADA on the rate change. And we held a public hearing for 2.5 hours. Can't remember the exact date it was that we had. It was the towards the end of July. Give consumers an opportunity to raise any concerns they had. We received no public comments through any of those forms as a result of those notifications. So we have not received calls from customers to the office, even informally, saying that they were unhappy with the rate increase. So, given that there was no...
phones connected?
No. So we've given a significant opportunity for consumers to raise any concerns they might have. The rate increase is appropriate and necessary. And with that, I recommend that the interim rates that were put in place be considered permanent.
Mr. Chairman, in addition to the notices that went out, there was a front page article about the proposed rate increase, and so we really think that we did have adequate public notice. And I would just mention that being that I have a desk at FMG that's close to the front desk, I have heard, you know, in light industrial customers come in, they're talking about signing up, you know, even if it's a temporary status. One of the large mall owners, as he was getting ready to leave, I got into a conversation with him to let him know that, you know, we're working on the overall project as far as expanding supply. I was interested in his interest in becoming a customer even at the current prices, and he indicated to me that his maintenance and boiler man said that even at today's price it was a no-brainer, that the maintenance cost on natural gas fired facilities is so low in comparison, and if there is a move afoot to bring a lower cost price in the future, those numbers just get better. In addition, his new owner is out of state, and they're interested in no longer being a user of fuel oil. A lot of the light industrial customers want to remove underground storage tanks, and so that even at today's price, there is interest in using commodity.
Thank you, Jim. Good news.
Yeah, that would be a good front page story.
Yes.
Yeah, I can make that happen.
Okay, questions? All right, so we have resolution G17-12. Well, motion. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'll move G17-12.
Second.
Thank you. Thank you both. Any further discussion? Greg, would you pull the board, please?
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruse.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. So that brings us up to item number E, which is executive session. I will entertain a motion to go into executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential financial information related to the Interior Energy Project, Mustang Operations Center, and Blue Crest Project.
Just a second. And we are in the exec session in the Aspen Room?
Aspen Room.
All right. Okay, well, we're going to do IGU first. IEP. Close enough.
Okay. You are back on the record.
Thank you. I will say the quorum was established and the board is not taking formal action. That's well, executive session. All right, so that brings us up to item number 8 under director comments. And director today, Brenda.
Thank you. Okay.
Looking forward to your comments.
Thank you. Items 8A and B, the loan dashboard reports and development project matrices are available for your review. Item 8C, on the continuing education calendar, if board members are interested in attending a course, please contact Sherry. And then 8D, the next board meeting is September 21st, 2017.
Okay. So, any board comments? Item number 9.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I first want to just express appreciation to our AIDA staff for their efforts to find a workable, reasonable solution to deal with the IGU expense issue that's recently serviced and has caused us, it's just caused considerable work and detail to bring to resolution. And today in resolution G1710A, we effectively dealt with the gas supply related expense, and I want to go on the record just saying that we are directing our AIDA management staff to communicate to IGU that the AIDA board, we want to bring this to closure. It's not open-ended, and we anticipate two future recommendations. The first is that ITU's utility integration cost invoices be considered under scope modification to ITU's existing SETS loan once the 105 plan is approved. And within that, I want to note, I think those costs are roughly $250,000 to this point in time, and plus reasonable direct costs to wrap that up. It's not open-ended. We need to get to the finish line. And the second recommendation I'm anticipating from our hardworking staff is that IGU's due diligence expenses for purchase of the Pentex assets be considered as a qualified expense for inclusion in the final package to accomplish the closing of the sale of the Pentex assets to IGU. This has been a thorny set of issues. We dealt with a resolution today dealing with the gas supply related expense. What remains in front of us is the integration costs and the due diligence expenses, and I'd like it to be clearly understood by our partners in IGU that we're approaching our limits, we're at our limit, and we want to get those finalized, firmed up, and done.
Thank you, Fred, and I appreciate you putting that on the record for us. Further comments? I'd like to thank Brenda, staff, for today's
Brenda, magnificent job of
stepping up to the plate.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hall of Famer, right?
I'm getting used to this now.
For Dan and Mark for joining us, and Jim and Gene for running over from, and of course, our guy that keeps us out of trouble over there, Jerry. So, we do appreciate all your efforts. And if there's no other comments on the board, I will entertain a motion for adjournment.
I don't want any more board packets like this.
So move. Second?